Welcome to The Break Breakdown. I'm Courtney Romano, and we're going to get right into it today because we have a jam-packed episode with screenwriter, actor, and producer Kelly Murtaugh. Her feature film, her debut feature as a screenwriter, Shapeless, got into the Tribeca Film Festival this year, and it's a film about her struggle with bulimia and her healing and her journey with her own personal eating disorder. And it's a story that she started writing. It kind of came to its first inception 11 years ago. And everyone has heard that quote, I'm assuming, of, you know, every overnight success is 10 years in the making. And what I got out of this conversation with Kelly was so deep and profound and useful. And I thought it was going to be useful in one way, and it ended up being useful in another, which is when you have clarity of vision, when you know that against all odds, you are trying to express the exact truth as you have witnessed and experienced it in your life, you are going to be on the right path. That doesn't mean every time you're going to get into the Tribeca Film Festival or Sundance or anything like that, or get a distribution deal. All of that is kind of like up to the whims of the chaos of life herself. But if you are telling the story with as much integrity as you can and as much creativity, and not just for the sake of being creative, but in really allowing yourself to live in that wonder and that awe that you had as a child, then you are going to find yourself on the right path with the story that you're telling. And I don't think that's always a very sexy point of view. Most people are like, well, just give me 5 steps to get into Tribeca Film Festival. But I think it's the accurate one, which is Kelly found her way into this very incredible breakthrough moment. You know, it's called the break breakdown. I am asking about what does it take to get a big break? And every question that I asked her, she drew it back to some internal shift that she made. And it's complicated, right? Because the internal shifts are the ones that only we are aware of most of the time. And they're not very Instagrammable, and they feel like nothing, and yet they are everything. And her story in all these like little micro adjustments that she was making at all these inflection points, when she was scared to do this, when she, you know, stopped apologizing for that, when she went back to the script because of this one particular piece of advice, all of this stuff that she brings up, I think is so useful no matter who you are and what you're doing, whether you're a filmmaker or not. I really think there's something beautiful in just her description of how this film came to life. And what's amazing is you're going to be able to see it this upcoming weekend. So when this episode is released, I believe it'll be just a few days before the Tribeca Film Festival opens. And she is going to be, her film is going to make its world premiere at the Tribeca Film Festival on June 12th. Everything that you need to find where Kelly is, where her movie Shapeless is online and at the festival will be in the show notes. Please follow her, follow Shapeless, support independent film, support her... you know, team of, she has a huge team of many female department heads, which is so important in creating an equal and, you know, a inclusive world in the film industry. So go ahead and just follow her up. Follow us while you're at it. Follow Queensbird Films on social, sign up for our newsletter. The very best thing that you could do for us is leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and share on social media. Those two things are the best that you can do. My cat is now scratching at the door trying to get in the kitchen, and this is a long episode, so let's just get right into it. I hope you love this conversation with screenwriter and actor Kelly Murtaugh.
I am just so excited to talk to you on multiple levels, Kelly, because you are a filmmaker and you are a mother. And I am also those things. And I have listened to so many different podcasts on filmmaking and on art and then also on motherhood. And I am always looking for that intersection because I'm like, why are we not intersecting these things that are truly intersected in real life? So I'm so excited to talk to you because not only do you have a beautiful almost 4-year-old girl, your film, your feature film, Shapeless, got into Tribeca Film Festival.
I'm still like, it did. It is.
It's so true. Excited. It happened to you. You did that. So let's dive right in because I just feel like you have so much to share, whether people who are listening are mothers or not. Like, just I just feel like you are going to be a goldmine of wisdom and interesting things to say. So Shapeless is your feature film that is going to debut in Tribeca Film Festival on June 12th. Is that right?
Yeah.
June 12th coming up. And I read that you started writing this 11 years ago. So how did it begin?
First of all, thank you for all those kind things you said. And I also feel like you are a goldmine of wisdom and motherhood and filmmaking. So I'm very excited for this conversation. And I do 100% agree. These things intersect. So let's talk about it. Let's do it. Let's, you know, highlight it or process whatever we want to do.
Amen.
So Shapeless, the idea for Shapeless began when I was in treatment for bulimia 11 years ago. And for me, I have always viewed art and especially films to be a way for me to learn something new, for me to be a way to understand people's perspectives, to process something I'm going through. I think art has that ability to do that for us, you know, whether it's films, music, paints, art in general. Art, life is art, in my opinion, you know, the way the wind sounds in the trees. Anyway, I'll go back to what I was saying. At the time, I was really seeking something, a book, a movie, something to be like what I'm going through, you know, to process what I was going through and to feel less alone. And what I realized pretty quickly is that when eating disorders were portrayed in films, it was either a very like quick storyline that usually was like the butt of a joke, or it was like an after school special where it was like, and then she got better. And I'm like, this is, none of this is true. Like, it's right. Not a joke. You know what I mean? It's not it's not a neat, tidy little bow. And then you got fixed and then you were done. I was like, there's nothing that really speaks to the reality of what this feels like. And so what had happened in my life, I was bulimic from a very young age. I was bulimic from like age 13. Up until at that point, I was 23 when I was in treatment. And I was also a singer. Singing was kind of that first art expression for me. And that was something that just came very naturally to me and very effortless to me. And I loved it. And then I went to college and kind of stopped singing. You know, I wasn't in high school choir anymore. And my senior year, I tried to go take voice lessons again. And my voice was just not in a great place. And I was, that teacher, that voice teacher recommended I go to a doctor to kind of see what was going on with my vocal cords. And so I went to that. I still don't know how I did that, but I went to the doctor and it wasn't great. You know, these are your vocal cords. They're very ravaged. This is going on. And, basically just, it was sort of like a career ending injury or so I thought. And I couldn't face it. I couldn't face that, like my bulimia, like I had done this to myself is the way I viewed it. You know, like I had done this to myself. The one thing I really, really loved and appreciated about myself at the time was that I could just sing, you know, and that wasn't there anymore. And I had the idea in treatment. I was like, I want to make a movie one day about a singer losing her voice to bulimia. And then at the time, 11 years ago, I was like, you know, nobody was talking about it still, even though I was in treatment for it. It was like, that wasn't, it's not like now where I feel like there's this consciousness shift with mental health, with awareness. And so that was the germ of the idea. So it was kind of like an idea. Like, I don't even know if I really started writing it. I think I started percolating.
Right.
And in the 11 years since, you know, I had relapses, I had life things happen. I never forgot it. I was like, that feels like the story I'm supposed to tell. But that's where it began, was then.
Yeah. No, it's so interesting what you're saying about finding your first expression, because I think for a lot of artists, like, we do have multiple ways that we express things. And often the first expression gets really sticky in our brains of like, that's who I am, because we're young, like, we're obviously, time works linearly here on Earth. And
I love that you just said that. We can go down a deep rabbit hole about time.
Oh my gosh. We probably should, because Mercury is now in retrograde. So all things are.
That one snuck up on me. I was still dealing with the lunar eclipse and, you know, good ways. I was like, yes. Well, I didn't know it was Mercury retrograde too.
Oh, we're just in constant upheaval, which feels right. It feels right to me. But I feel like we get stuck because we're at our youngest point, right? So we're at our most, well, I don't know. I feel like young kids are so close to the threshold of birth and like before time, before birth, that they're like very open. And then we kind of close up and we get super rigid. And then our work is opening back up to that. So I feel like in that 20-year-old space, at least for me, that was a time where I got really fixated on who I am is exactly who I am right now. And I think that first expression of art, especially because we live in a capitalist culture that's like, well, you go from point A to point B to be a success, and it's a very straight line. It's a very narrow line. So you need to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G. You know, we get fixated on that. But I love the idea. I haven't seen Shapeless yet, obviously, because it hasn't debuted at Tribeca Film Festival yet. But
every time you say it, I'm like,
I know, I'm trying to say it like to just be like, by the way,
I love it. Me too.
If you don't know your life, this moment is pretty awesome.
It's pretty profound.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's sinking in. You're helping. Thank you.
Good. But it is, essentially what I'm trying to say is like, we start off with this one expression, but I love that your film is exploring, and I don't know how it ends and I don't know what happens to her, the character in the film, but is exploring what that means to express, what that means to lose your voice, because I relate to that on so many levels. And I think a lot of artists who are maybe mid-career artists, like closer to, I think I'm older than you, but like around our age, who we're not new on the scene. We've been here for a minute, but we're not super, you know,
where you want to be necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah. But that mid-career point where you're like, look, I am not giving up on this, but I need to make this the way I need to make it. You know, so I guess I'm wondering for you, when did you decide, okay, in that 11-year process, it's percolating, it's here, I'm gonna make this movie now.
Becoming a mother.
I have
becoming a mother.
Yes, 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 yes.
I will yes. say, like, up until that point, I ended up, before I became a mom, like maybe a year or two, I was in New Orleans, and the film is set in New Orleans. I'm from that area. And I was with my husband at the time, and I kind of like was like, okay, now I gotta like at least get something on paper. This was before I became a mom. And so I just Googled like screenwriting classes in New Orleans, because at that point I was a professional actress. I had never really written. I'd written a couple short films, but not like a full feature length script. And the thing that popped up, it was like a class at Loyola University. It was starting tomorrow. And it was like for the community of screen, for people who want to learn how to screenwrite, come with an idea. And I was like, okay, universe.
Wow.
Okay. I see you. You got to go. And even right before I walked in, I almost didn't go because I was terrified. I was like, I know the story, but I'm scared to share it with strangers. And, I was scared, but I went, and I'm so glad I did. A great teacher can be so life-changing. And this great teacher was like, I don't understand. I don't know anything about this, but let's look at this. And we just processed it in a way of like, cultivate this into a movie. And so from there, I had like an outline and like first 10 pages written that were very different than the movie I have today. But that was kind of it up until that point. And I kind of would try to write, and it was very stop-starty because of the emotional component to it. And also I was dealing with my own limiting beliefs of nobody wants to see a movie like this. You don't know what you're doing. Blah, 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 blah. You know, we can be our own worst enemy, especially as artists. And
yes.
Yeah.
So I have a couple of questions. So you were, I love this dichotomy that happens with human beings where you Googled, I want to take this screenwriting class. It came serendipitously in perfect timing, like not allowing you to hesitate, right? Because it was the next day. So you had to make a choice. And yet you wanted it, and yet you were scared of it, right? Do you remember what scared you about it?
Well, it was an unknown. I was scared I wasn't going to be good at writing my own story. I was like, wow. You know, I hope I can figure that out. And you feel like you have to put all the pressure on yourself. And I think that's something I learned along the way is I kept looking at the big picture. I kept looking at the Tribeca premiere, hopefully. Mm. And I was standing where I was at that point. That was probably 2015 when that class came around, maybe 2014. And I kept like worrying about things that I didn't need to worry about. And I'm reading this book. I don't know if you've read this book, but it's been so great for me because I think I'm a fast thinker. I kind of see things before, or I try to see things before they happen to prepare. And yes. So this book I'm reading called The Power of Now. Have you ever read it?
Yes. Yes. Eckhart Tolle.
Yes. And this one line I keep going back to, and it's been life-changing advice for me. And it's the only step that matters is the one you're taking right now.
Right.
Because maybe that's a deep breath. Maybe that's not working on your script. Maybe that's living life and going on a trip. I don't know. But I think now when I look in retrospect, I see all the little teeny little baby steps and steps back and stumbles. And it was just one little breath at a time. And I think I was scared also that how people were going to react. At that point, I was comfortable with being like, okay, I am in recovery for bulimia. Like this is something I was talking about, at least with like, you know, a group of people, but this was the first scenario I'd ever really been in where I was going to go into a group of strangers, just be like, hi, this is my movie. This is what I dealt with and go. And that class was so interesting because it was only six of us. And so we all had very different scripts. So that was cool. And there was one particular guy in the class who just didn't get it. And he ground my gears so hard. And he would always just be like, I don't understand. Why would someone do this? Like, I don't get this. Like, this doesn't make sense to me. And he started, and it really annoyed me at first. And then I realized I switched my perspective and I said, oh, you are the person I am trying to reach with this movie. Not only the people who understand it and are open to it and maybe have gone through something like that, but the outsider. How do I bring the outsider in? How do I get this person who is just viewing it under this one lens of like, ew, why? I don't get it. I don't want, and you know, we're going to have those people watch this movie and feel that way too. But he started to really, I started to get curious instead of angry. And that helped.
Yes.
That helped. But I think back to your question earlier is something that I think went alongside of each other was me getting older, feeling a little more comfortable with like, you know, this is something that doesn't mean something's wrong with me. It's just something I have dealt with or am dealing with, and that's okay. And I can view myself with compassion, and becoming a mother really, really helped with self-compassion.
Yes. Yes. I have like chills all over my body with everything that you're saying, because I agree that in my timeline, becoming a mother was also very clarifying and freeing in certain ways, especially because, you know, people say like, there's this myth of like, if you're an artist, you need to be in pain and, you know, like feeling like angsty.
Suffer.
Yes, you need to suffer, please. And my my experience specifically with the labor that I had was so difficult and so challenging, not only during the 26 hours that it was happening, but for like the next 4 months, which people don't understand. And still in therapy, I cry about it because it was such a upending, breaking open time. But that pain and that like difficult, challenging thing that I had becoming a mother, that matrescence, actually allowed me to heal a lot of things that have allowed me to write things now that I have not been able to write before. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So I totally hear that in that, like, that's not everyone's experience, obviously. And I don't think you need to be a mother to have that experience, right?
Right.
It happens to be similar for us. People can have that in a breakup. People can have that in moving across the country. People can have that, you know, tripping on the street and having, you know, like it's, there's an abundance of ways that that kind of breaking open can happen. But I think that, you know, art can process that. And it's almost like what you were saying before about not knowing what you needed to do until the moment you needed to do it. I said that when I was 9 months pregnant and due, I was like, listen, I don't know how to have a 2-year-old. All I know is how to give birth. I don't even know how to have a 1-week-old. I'll know when she's 1 week old, you know?
Yes.
And now I'm looking at you, a mother of a almost 4-year-old. And I'm like, well, I don't know how to have a 4-year-old, but I know how to have a 2.5-year-old.
Yes. And it's sort of, it helps me step out of myself to go back to, whoa, what's going on right now? What's true right now? Is this made up in your head about what you're scared about in the future? That's just all in your head. Cause that's wasting your energy.
Right.
And I hear you also. And I think, again, it doesn't have to be parenthood. But I think that life can sometimes provide these opportunities of transitions, of change, of moments where you kind of have to claim what your heart really is saying to you. What is your heart really calling for? And how, and in that regard, it's like, becoming a mother also. When I was pregnant, I learned meditation. That was something that I felt very called to do when I was pregnant. And that also changed my life because it helped stop the thought. I was like, oh wait, that mean thought, that's not true. That's just like my thought, my mind going on and on and on. And that sort of helped me. And I think that goes back to that, what am I doing right now? Meditation helped in that regard, where it wasn't this constant chatter of me thinking I wasn't doing enough. You know, that was kind of my big theme of life up into, I think still I'm dealing with, of this perfectionism of this not being enough. And I think mothers feel that pressure even more because of the world we live in and America. And, you know, there, it's all the things, you know, when you're pregnant, don't tell anyone till you're past the first trimester. Meanwhile, the first trimester is the hardest, or was for me.
Same. Yes.
And I'm like, why are we not talking about this? And so that's why I was like, why are we not talking about bulimia? Because I realized in my own life, the more I spoke about it with people who were kind and curious and open and were here, there to listen. And that became with the process of making this movie, in order to like communicate what this was like to the creators and the collaborators I was with, my shame lessened.
Yes.
Because I realized, oh, wow, okay, I'm saying this right now. I didn't die. And also, usually, whether that person has dealt with it themselves, someone very near and dear to them has,
right,
because of eating disorders being this so prevalent, and they don't discriminate. It's people of all ages, race, genders, socioeconomic classes. It's there, but nobody was talking about it. So I believe in this, of what we're doing, this dialogue of like mothers coming together, people, collaborators coming together, talking about the things we don't talk about, and finding the commonality between it.
Yes. And I think what you're saying is so important, like speaking about it, because you don't have to come as a filmmaker, as an artist. I don't think we come with answers. I think we come with questions, right? And so I know that part of my healing from things that I've gone through has been in saying what happened. That's it. I don't need to make it have meaning because it has meaning. I don't need to like make it into something it's not. But if I don't say what happened, it eats me alive, right? So I think that's really profound what you're saying, and also makes so much sense to me just in terms of how we use art as human beings.
It's beautiful, isn't it? And I agree 100% because when I look at where I am now and like how this all began and in my own healing with bulimia, it's gone hand in hand. As I wrote this, processed it, spoke about it, collaborated, and that was in opening it up. You know, I realized, and especially a film, you can't do it alone. You really can't. Like right. You need, it's a group project at the end of the day. And I knew that that's what I wanted it to be because I knew I wasn't going to have all the answers.
Right.
But it came when my daughter was 4 months old. I watched The Big Sick, which is this Kumail Nanjiani movie that he wrote with his wife. And it's this beautiful film. And I loved it. And my film's nothing like it, but in something about that film, I was like, okay, I see a first draft. And my husband would just like bring me Fallon, my daughter, I would breastfeed her. And I would just like, I was like working at the house, you know, and I was just wrote this thing, this first draft. And I think what happened then when she was finally born is I said, oh, I want to make this very much for her to, so if she ever feels in this way that she feels like perfectionism is crushing her and wants to reach for something like this, like bulimia to comfort her, I want her to know there's another option. We can talk about it. There's a movie about it, you know, and I think I wasn't aware of my own healing in this process. I think in retrospect, I'm like, wow. Okay. This really helped me and healed me. But I will say at the beginning, my daughter was a huge motivator. And also others. I was like, I hope that one day someone watches this and feels less alone.
Yes.
And feels understood. And in that, and also in making this film and art, and there have been so many crossroads where I felt backed against a wall, even with decision-making about whether it was creative or business or whatever. And I think it was that what meditation taught me and what presence taught me was going back in mm-hmm. and checking back in here with my heart and gut. Like, what do you really believe? What do you really think? Is this someone else talking to you or what do you really think? And I think that was a powerful tool as well, which helped too.
Yeah. My husband and I always say, like, for decision-making, you know, when it's a no, like, you know, for sure when it's a no. And if it's not a definite no, then, you know, like you can work through that with those tools, like you're saying, to go back inward. But I'm curious with Shapeless, was there ever a point in time where perhaps you were like, I know I need to make this, but I just don't see how this is going to happen. Was there a time when you thought like this isn't going to get made?
Oh my gosh. I think every day. I think every day, you know, even before pre-production and production and post, even those days, I was like, this isn't going to work. But yes, I would get, but it was always, I will say maybe something would happen externally. Like maybe I would send the script to someone and they were just like, I don't get this, or like, I don't know about this. And that those people again, were kind of like the guy I met in that screenwriting class where I'm like, okay, what am I learning from this experience? One, maybe they're not the right person to be collaborating with, but two, like, how can I take this not personally somehow? Mm-hmm. Step out of my own way.
Yes. What information is this giving me that has nothing to do with my worth, but is maybe pointing me down a path that like I need to clear or I haven't seen? Right. How is it redirecting me in service of the project?
Exactly. And I think, you know, when I had that first draft, the one I was talking about when my daughter was 4 months old and I just like wrote something out, I still had had this idea that wasn't quite on paper, but I was like, okay, hopefully I can. And I felt like I needed a director. I was like, I really need a collaborator. I need a director who I can work close with. Cause I knew I wanted to star in it. And I was like, I don't also like, I can't produce and I can't, no, too no. Much. I want someone else to direct. And I wanted some sense of magic in the script, like some sense of, I guess fantasy, like something where you didn't quite know what was real. Because yeah. That's kind of what it feels like when you have an eating disorder, or maybe when you're really deep in paranoia or anxiety, you're kind of like, I'm not quite sure what's real. So I didn't know what that magic looked like, but it wasn't really in that first draft, but I did was like, okay, you just got to send it out. And I sent it to Samantha Aldana, who is the director, because we knew each other in New Orleans and I loved her work. And she does genre, filmmaking, and she has had beautiful films up until that point that all had like a little sense of alternate, like we're quite kind of in our own made up world, which I was like, this is what I want to do with Shapeless too. And thankfully she was like super interested, and that began this year. We called it creative therapy because it was like, you know, we read books, she read the books about eating disorders. We watched all the movies we could get our hands on about them. And there weren't, it was kind of the treatment film. It was similar to what I had mentioned. And I ended up, throughout that process, we ended up working with a co-writer too, who she had been working with, Bryce Parsons Tweston, who is so talented. And in that process of collaborating with them, opened the script up big time. Because at that point I was like, why can't I figure this out? Why can't I do this alone? And I was feeling guilty and I was feeling angry at myself. And I was like, this is something that happened to you and you can't figure this out. And I was like, maybe I'm not supposed to.
Yeah.
Maybe this isn't the one I'm supposed to figure it all out alone. Yes. And maybe I'm supposed to process this. And so that became, we would just be on the phone for hours all processing, like, what really happened? What was that like? How did that feel? Because we wanted to create a visual language of like the feelings of it all.
Right.
You know, like what is, and we wanted the audience to feel like they live with this, to feel that cringy dysturbia. And through that process, I started to realize, wow, this came way better when I got out of my own way and just let it, kind of surrendered it a little bit. And it started to grow from there and get bigger. And another thing that really helped too, is the director at some point finally was like, this isn't a documentary. You know, yes, you're the inspiration or like the seed. And that helped me as a writer, because then my imagination opened up. And yes. I said, oh, this character can go on her own journey. And that really helped as well. So again, it's like getting out of your own way. And it's kind of going back to being a kid again, mm-hmm. getting imaginative, you know what I mean? Like daydreaming.
Right.
Wouldn't it be cool if like something like this would happen, instead of thinking what I'd been doing was coming at it from an actor producer standpoint from set, where I'm like, oh, I know how hard this is.
Yes.
I know what this will take. So I'm not going to write this because we don't have the money. We don't have the time. We don't have the da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it's like, I had to go backwards, which was helpful with Samantha. She was like, go back. And that opened up my creativity, allowing myself to do it.
Yes. It's so interesting because, well, I'll say, I've said it on the podcast before, I think, or on Instagram or somewhere where I'm talking to the void.
not the void. We're listening.
I'm currently writing and in pre-production for this thing about anxiety. And so very similar, right? Like what's real, what's fake. And one of my dear friends and creative collaborators who's consulting on the project said the exact same note to me about stop writing from the producer standpoint. Just be a writer right now. Don't, because I'm going to write and direct it. He's like, you're not directing it right now. You're not producing it right now. Right now you're writing it. And then we figure out how to make this happen.
Yes.
But we can't figure that out until you go into the script and just dream. And exactly like what you're saying, just think like, well, wouldn't it be cool if cereal rained down from the ceiling, or like, you know, whatever it
is.
And then you have your budget and your constraints and your location requirements and what the actors will or won't do. And you figure it out from there, but you can't do it unless you go all in from the jump.
I agree. Well, first of all, wonderful that you had someone like I did in your corner.
Yes.
Bringing you back, because I feel like we're kindred spirits in this way, where we're very go-getters. We're like, I will figure it out. I will make it happen. Don't worry. I will figure it out. And then It's like somehow, sometimes somebody else needs to come in and say, hey, you don't have to figure that one out.
Yes.
Let me figure that one out.
Yes.
And that started happening in like everyone's, I look around at our team now and the credit list and like all the people that have touched this project, their hearts and their talent and their hard work and all the things that everyone else was masters in that I didn't have to figure out.
Yeah.
And I think that's so freeing, because it takes the pressure, because yes, there are things to stress about. Maybe not today. Maybe you don't need to worry about the budget today and like how you're going to get the locations and blah, 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 blah. Like what can you do today?
Right.
Maybe that's not even writing your script. Maybe that's taking a nap.
Yes. It often is.
It often is taking a nap. In fact, Courtney, I wrote this in my sleep, actually.
Yeah, exactly. So this brings me to a question that I'm so interested in, because coming from someone who likes to control the steps and be on top of it, like I always think of that. I don't know if you know that movie. What is it? Not Adventures in Babysitting. Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. I've seen that one a long time ago. Yeah.
Long time ago. I used to watch it on repeat on like VHS tapes. And she's like, right on top. I'll be right on top of that, Rose. Remember that line?
Maybe I'll be right on top of that. Yes. But yeah. And then at moms, because it's kind of like a constant multitask life when you're a mom, you're like, you're hearing this thing, you're doing this thing, you're hoping they don't die over here with this thing, but you're like,
yeah. And you've got, I always tell my therapist, I'm always 17 steps ahead. I know exactly when we're going to run out of this thing. And I know exactly when I have to get that thing, whether it's like toilet paper or diapers or wipes or, you know, fruit packs or whatever it is, because life is scheduled to a T. So it's like that mentality of like, right on top of that, Rose, like I got it. I can do it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to make sure the trains run on time. But there's like also in filmmaking, especially because like you said, it's a group project. It is collaborative. You really, if you want to do something, especially like a feature length, something, you can't really do it alone. There needs to be like at least one other person involved. Yeah. Because there are all these heavy lifts. There are all these like, all these, I don't want to say brick walls, because I think you can, you know, surmount them, but there are these obstacles that are going to redirect you, like inevitable, like that's part of the game. There's no question it's going to happen. So I'm wondering with Shapeless, what was the heaviest lift in your mind? Was it fundraising? Which I feel like in my mind, that's just, I'm always like, how to pay for art? It seems like maybe collaborating, pulling people into this was more serendipitous and did kind of flow. Like what was the hardest thing to do?
I will say we were very blessed in the fundraising scenario, because we did a round with like friends and family, and we did it, you know, we had a pitch thing and everything, and we did it with like investors and lawyers. We did the whole thing. It wasn't like just getting $5 from everybody and then didn't do anything with it. But I will say that came together thankfully well, you know, because people responded to the script and the project and what we hope it does one day. I think sometimes I feel like the heaviest lift was like keeping my own sanity and not spinning out too much. But I think it was the sense of, for me, I had come into this project as a very people-pleasy, very like, I don't want to make waves. I want us to all be friends. I want it to work out. It's going to be great. We're going to be great. And that doesn't happen. You know, it's, you can plan as to a T as you want. And then there is always something that's going to go, and you have to improvise, and you have to. And we were always racing time. It was an 18-day shoot. And it was intense. you know, it's a very lonely movie. So it was like a lot of me for 18 days. And like, and I also, I EP'd it and I starred in it. And so I was trying to like not have the producer goggles on and keep like actor glasses on, but in there. Right. So I will say, I think sometimes the heaviest lifting was me being like, this isn't your worry right now.
Right.
We're with Ivy, my character's name. I'm Ivy right now or whatever. And you know, we had some cool stuff going on in my film. When you see it, there's some transformations that happen and we did those all practically. You know, it was a lot of prosthetics, a lot of like camera lens type vibes, mirrors. We used a lot of practical aspects. So in that regard, setups took longer. You know, sometimes I was in a chair for 5 hours with things getting applied to me, which is super fun. And I'm so glad I got to do that. But I think it was this sense of what was kind of felt like the heaviest lift for me is I felt like responsible for it all.
Yeah.
Which I am, but I think I was like having some crushing pressure about that, of feeling like I was responsible for everyone's experience there.
You know, oh man. Yes. And I think there's something in that people pleasing thing that is related to the pressure we put on ourselves to be responsible. Because for instance, like I can imagine, I don't know if this is your experience, but I know that when I write something that is truly of my world and my experience, I always have a little lady in the back of my head being like, who do you think you are to talk about your life? Who?
Uh-huh.
Who do you think you are?
Yeah, girl, I think me and that voice in my head and your voice in your head, they're probably saying the same things.
Yeah. They're out to drinks right now, cackling like, well, when they get to their next script, ha ha ha.
Yep.
but I think that.
Their mustaches.
Yeah, exactly. I think that is really, really challenging, to turn off when it's attached to a budget and a schedule and a timeline and expectations, and everyone has put in all this work already and you want to make it worthwhile for them. And the truth is, what I hear you saying and what I am trying to learn in my life is that you are not responsible for if everyone has a good time. Like, you're not responsible for them getting what they want out of this experience. You are responsible for the intention and the thoughtfulness and the kindness that you bring. And then how that's received is none of your business, in a sense.
Girl, this has been my life work of letting go of what other people think.
Yeah.
And this is the greatest, I think putting art out there is one of the greatest practices in that, you know, and something I've held back from because of fear of how it would be received. This film, I think it came in divine timing and it's coming out when it needed to. But I am sure you can relate where you feel like you've stopped yourself in the past from doing the thing, telling someone about the thing, exploring the thing, you know, because you just immediately think, well, people are going to hate it. And you know what? There are going to be some people that are going to hate my movie. Like,
right.
And that kind of starts to get me a little bit antsy. And then I have to go back to you. I always was coming from here. I know this. I know that I was always coming from my heart.
Right.
Or at least I was trying to, whether my intent and that I always had the best intentions, whether, and no, I did not do this perfectly whatsoever. I have been on the ground crying, sobbing and heaving and just not understanding any of it and how it's going to happen and how it's going to work. And again, I don't know if we all had to figure that out in that time frame, but I think as artists, especially because we do feel, or maybe I don't speak in generality for all artists, but I know from my experience, I feel the world deeply. I feel emotions deeply. That is something that is just who I am. That's a part of me. I've always felt like I could process and hopefully try to empathize with others, whether I didn't understand what their experience was like or growing up the way they grew up or the way that they lived. But I will say that sometimes because of those deep feelings, I can kind of like be in the corner in a ball cringing and crying with anxiety, where that exists too.
Yes.
But it's like, how do we get out of that and say, okay, I'm not being egotistical here. I'm just speaking my truth and I'm speaking what I believe is what I need to say.
And there's plenty of room for that. There's space for that. Me taking up my little corner of the world does not mean that there's not space for someone to tell a different story in a different way at a different, like, I think
yes.
Sometimes I put too much pressure on myself to be like, well, Courtney, like again, the who are you to do XYZ is like probably the loudest thing in my head.
Yeah.
But the truth is like, that's a concept we've been taught again from capitalism of like, and a patriarchal kind of like white supremacist thinking that says like, there's only so much pie, not everyone can have it. And so that means we have to have like a scarcity mindset, meaning that like, you better hold on to yours and you better compete with everyone. When in reality, you know, coming from my perspective of someone who's writing not the same thing at all, and it's a series, it's not a feature, but hearing you talk about your film is actually really emboldening to me as I'm working on mine, right? It's not a competition. We only like a rising tide lifts all boats kind of a thing. And it's just remembering that, you know, we don't have to live that way.
Right. Oh, well, thank you for saying that, because likewise, you being able to hear your project is emboldening me too. And I think you spoke it so beautifully, you know, that me taking up my corner of the world isn't taking that away from someone else. Right. I'm going to keep processing what I feel like I want to process and what, however that manifests, whether it's a film, whether it's music, whether it's like, who knows? And I feel that has taken a long time for me to get to that sense of surrender. And I tried to live in that sense of surrender and flow. And you're right about that scarcity mindset. That's the most crippling thing, because then that goes back to, I'm not going to have enough to be able to do this, so I just won't do it at all.
Right.
And then we have less art in the world and we need more art in the world. And I believe like, you know, I've run the gamut of all the ways that I'm trying to like see how people are going to hate my movie. I mean, I hope they love it, but you know what I mean? Like, okay, they're going to say this, or they're going to think that, or it's going to be because of this.
Yeah.
And I have to go back to like, here's what I did. You know, you don't have to love it. You can hate it, whatever, but I made the thing I made. And I believe that everyone should make the thing they want to make that's coming from their heart, because yes, awareness, we need to see more films about everyone of all walks of life, of all colors, of all genders, of all experiences, because yes, that's how we're going to be able to speak. I think of, to give you an example, my sweet mom, you know, a couple of years ago, we didn't really ever talk about my movie. It was just like, how's your movie? You know, and then it wasn't ever about like what it was really about. Mm. And recently when The Crown came out this past season with Princess Diana, I haven't seen it yet, but from what I've heard is that they're very respectfully and honestly showing her bulimia. And that made me so excited to hear that, mm-hmm. You know, because I had like a slight little tinge of like, oh, somebody did the bulimia story before I did. And then I was like, no. And so the perfect example is that my mom called me and said, I watched The Crown. Have you seen it? They're showing Princess Diana. And it became this dialogue about bulimia. And before you knew it, we were talking about me and bulimia and my movie. And I realized in that moment, I said, wow, that's exactly why you're making the movie you're doing. So hopefully people can have these bridge conversations. And it was cool to see how a piece of art did that in my own life.
Yes. Wow. It's making me think that like, you know, who are you not to do it? Because maybe your movie affects this person over here, but maybe The Crown angle on it, the people who made that, that's going to affect your mom. And maybe all of these different ways of telling this, you know, slice of life, like this thing that is true about life that exists, that is part of our experience. We need to tell it so many different ways, as many ways as possible. Like to what you're saying too, people of different races and genders and economic classes and all these things, like everyone needs to be telling these stories because we need to be able to process and take in and hear our stories back in order to live in, I don't know, like in our highest potential, whatever that means.
Right? Yes, to you and to that. I 100% agree, because I think art is this great expression of empathy at the end of the day, especially as an actor. I will say, you know, I love acting. Like, I hope I get to go act some more after this movie comes out. I'm like, I feel like I need a producing break and I want to just like go act and just do some things. Anyway, you know, it's always that sense of a great example that my acting mentor teacher would always use is, you know, sometimes you're going to get a character that you're going to audition for and you're going to not agree with them. You're not going to like them. They might be a racist. They might be Hitler. You know what I mean? But like, how do you find a way in? How do you find the sense of understanding in? And I'm not saying that I do not condone, like, I'm not saying go be a racist or anything like that, or be Hitler. It's a sense, it steps you back outside of yourself for a second and to say, like, how can I greater understand this person that I'm about to have to portray or whatever? And what I realized in that exercise of what he was speaking about, it's sort of that, like when that guy was grinding my gears in my class and I was just like, oh my God. And you just want to give up, and you can very much give up on people, very much set boundaries. But
yes.
I think it gave me a sense of stepping back, saying, I'm doing the work. I'm doing my best. I'm going to try and create kindness and love and light anywhere I go. And step outside of that judgment zone a little bit. And I think art has that capacity to do that because of the dialogue it creates.
I totally agree. And I think, you know, the best we can ask for is to witness what's happening in life, you know? Like, that's the best we can ask for. We don't have to, with art, we don't have to say like, oh, I excuse Hitler because I see how he grew up. You don't have to do that. But you can see a whole story and hold everything together, you know, in one, you can hold opposing thoughts together. You can hold contradictions together, you know, Walt Whitman style. What does he say? I am vast. I contain multitudes. And I think holding everything like that is healing in a way, because we want to be whole. We don't want to just express part of our lives. We don't want to just, ingest, you know, the Disney level understanding of these big ideas, like, you know, the Disney level understand, like, you know, The Little Mermaid and Coco and all these movies that are just like, oh my gosh, we just watched it a couple of weeks ago.
And I bawl every time. I mean, snotty, yes. Bawling, crying. Yes.
But every time Remember Me comes on, my daughter Elle looks up at me and she says, Mama cry, Mama cry. And I said, yeah, why does Mama cry? She goes, because it's so beautiful.
Oh my God, that's so sweet.
I'm like, please never pronounce that word, enunciate that word correctly. It's too cute.
It's always beautiful from now on.
Yeah, it's beautiful. But I guess my point is just saying that there's that level of understanding that is okay. That's good. That works for us when we're 2 and 4 and whatever. It's like a general understanding, but as we get older and as we get more in touch with ourselves and the world around us, we want to go deeper. We want it to be complicated because it is. Like, we want it to be vibrant because it is. When you were scared of sharing your story with bulimia, that work through process with your creative team was all about looking at you were looking at what you were scared of, and like the healing part of it was just in looking at it. Like you can't even guess what part of facing your fear is going to heal in you. Like you can't guess, not you, but the general you.
Right, right.
I can't guess when I'm like, okay, I'm gonna face this fear of putting this certain thing out there. I don't know what healing I'm gonna get from it. But you know that when your fear is faced, the shame lessens, the guilt lessens. It doesn't mean they go away, but there is a like lightening of the load. And collectively, I've been feeling like, you know, this whole year has been collective trauma. And then we're gonna need collective healing. Like we're gonna need stories that actually go in some pretty dark places, whether they're funny or they're, you know, irreverent or they're horror or like fantasy or whatever genre it is. It's like we need all of these different kinds of stories to process what just happened.
100%. I agree. And it goes back to like, I think that little voice that's in our heads that's having cocktails right now and talking bad about us, those mean voices in our head. I have apologized for this story countless times. Countless times I have come to and it's been recently until I stopped apologizing because I've come at it with like, okay, it's a personal story. It's about this, but don't be afraid. It's about this. This is what it does. And sometimes I think it's like, we just have to see it. We don't necessarily have to like, I don't have to give you the primer. And that's what I think about. I hope for other films and art as well. And I think that what I hope this year has provided is this sense of breaking down the old things that don't work anymore in our society and in ourselves. And then hopefully that will open up space for others to feel safe enough to come forward with their own stories.
Amen, 1,000 times. And what's cool is that I feel like that's what you're doing with Shapeless. You got into Tribeca Film Festival.
Courtney, I love this. I love that you just keep
going. I am here anytime.
It's wild. I'm so grateful. I'm so thankful.
Did you have, now you said that you had in your mind, that's where I want to go back when you were just imagining it. Like what was your, did you have a strategy?
No, I mean, like all I knew at that, I was daydreaming about like the big indie film festival premiere, like a Tribeca, you know, like anywhere, hey, we're open to the miracle, you know, like,
yeah.
And I think that was always the loose strategy. It was like, okay, let's make it and then get it to the film festivals. But something that really was pivotal in our arc last year, right before it all shut down, we were in the editing room. And we'd gotten to this point in the editing room where it was like, I think we're going to need, it's about time we talk about pickups, you know, like we need some pickups. We need some, you know, a couple things here, a couple things there. And then it all locked down and then it kept being locked down and it kept being locked down. And we were like, and this was, nothing was filming. This wasn't
right.
This was like back when everything was stopped. And it was, that was one of those moments where I remember I was like, I don't know when this movie's going to get done. Everyone's scattered.
And because just for people who don't know, there's also a festival timeline.
Yes.
So like there are due dates that are coming right up.
And I just had to release all this construct of time that I had considered in my head and all the expectations gone. And that was obviously scary, but then it creates this sense of surrender again, or it can, where it's like, I just truly was like, I can't control this. I can't make the world open back up right now. And I know we all wanted to try to do that with our mind powers at some point, you know, but I will say that moment we went back to the drawing board and we're like, what do we have now? And it created this lonelier film, which behooves the entire experience, I think, for the viewer, and also what bulimia is and eating disorders are, which is the isolation, it's the paranoia, it's the anxiety, you know. And also last year we had applied, which I don't know if y'all have spoken about this before on your podcast, but any filmmakers who are like at that point where you've shot things, but you don't have like the finished product and you're kind of like trying to find that piece in post-production, the actual thing. We got into IFP. It was called IFP at the time, Independent Filmmaker Project. Now it's been rebranded as the Gotham.
Oh, so yes. The,
mm-hmm. So it's for independent filmmakers, and we applied to their narrative lab, and we were one of only six films to get in last year, which was, I mean, a miracle. It was a miracle for that to come along when everyone was collectively, especially in our industry, like, are we ever going to get back together again in these big ways and make big right. movies? Like, I don't know. And that really started to kind of hone in it's like a mentorship networking type lab. And that really helped us like hone in that quieter, more lonely thing. And so then it was like, oh, wait, actually we had this film in what we already shot, but you have to have something close in around you to see like, okay, what's my other branch that I can reach to? Right. And then it ended up being a swinging vine into Tribeca.
That's amazing.
Thank God.
Oh my gosh. Amazing. Like true. What was it even like to find out? Like, what was that?
Well, you know, me being the deep feeler, the programmer called us, and it was like right after we had sent it in. I think it was like the next day or two. And she was like, can you guys hop on the phone? And meanwhile, I always revert back to like Tiny Kelly, where I'm like, am I in trouble? Like, what did I do? Oh God, did we not send in the thing properly? Like, is the audio messed up? No, it was a good thing. Sometimes things are good, you guys. They're not always the worst case yes. scenario. And she called, and I was on the phone with me and Samantha and this programmer, Liza. And she just said, we love this film so much. This film, and just spoke so beautifully about its uniqueness and its boldness. And then also like what it's about and the capacity of how it can reach people and hopefully have this sense of understanding, collective understanding. And offered us the world premiere over the phone. And I immediately like burst into, I'm like, oh God, this is a dream come true. I'm like cry. Meanwhile, Sam's like asking probably the questions we needed to ask, like, what does this mean? And you know, I mean, she was excited yeah. too, but I was just like crying.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, oh, you know, whatever, it's fine. But I was just so floored and grateful.
Did it feel like an affirmation of putting your story out there?
Yes. Because again, you know, thinking back into 2020, which would have been us having test screenings, us having people watch it, that didn't happen because no one could get together. It was a very tight, it was very much under a lid, Shapeless was, because of and I'm so grateful. I just want to say, I'm so grateful that we had already shot our movie.
Yes.
And we were about to shoot this movie in 2020. And my heart goes out to all of those filmmakers that had to stop that train. Hopefully you guys got it back going again, but to stop a train of production or pre-production, that's intense. That's a whole other level of intense.
Yes.
And it did. It felt like validation of, oh, people see it and are responding to it as just a film. Because I always was like coming in with like, let me tell you about it. Let me tell you about the story. Let me tell you what it's about. And I felt it was that apology energy, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
That imposter energy, that voice. And something that was really cool was our publicist, who we're now working with, when he first saw it, he watched it twice and like loved it. And he was like, I love this film. And let's get on the phone. So we were on the phone chatting about like, if we would work together. And about halfway through, I said, you know, it being a personal story. And he was like, wait, I didn't know this was a personal story. And I was like, what? Like, you just watched this movie? Like, you just watched it as a movie?
Because you felt like, well, you wouldn't be interested in it unless you knew how personal it was to me?
Yes. I thought I had to explain before you saw it. Like, okay, I'm sorry, this is about bulimia. And no, I was even my own self, who had been comfortable now for years talking about my own bulimia and experience. I think I was like sort of doing that energy with my own piece of art instead of just letting it go out into the world and do what it needs to do.
Right.
I've heard, I don't know if you've heard this metaphor. I've heard filmmakers, and I believe this too, use the metaphor of a film or art or the creative process being like having a child, where it's like you're laboring, you're birthing, mm-hmm. you know, Shapeless, please go to college. You're moving out. I love you. I love you. You can always come home. I think I'm ready for a new little creative baby. I don't know.
Yes.
But it is. It makes sense, right?
Yes. I mean, and also like just, you know, tying back into motherhood, what that brings up for you to go through a process that is so personal in, even if you're not the writer of the story, right? Even if you're a director working with someone else's script, or you're a writer who's not writing directly about your life experience, like you're still saying like, this is the vision. This is the thing that I care about. I am putting all my eggs into this basket, because there's no way to make a film. There's no way to make art that is at that scale without putting all of your eggs into the basket. Like there's not really a plan B, really. There's contingency plans, but it's like, you're all in. And even just saying you're all in, committing like that, is revealing. It shows people what you, Kelly, care about. And if people know what you, Kelly, care about, they're going to see you. And then if you're seen, what happens? I mean, that's what plays out in my mind, right? It's like, what if I do, if I say, this is what I stand for, this is where I am, this is how I feel is right to express, this is how I want to express, then people are going to look directly at me if I'm doing my job right. And what's very interesting about your story that's kind of hitting me, and I'd like you to confirm or deny, because I don't know. It sounds like you always had the idea that you wanted, you know, obviously Tribeca, big things to come from it, perhaps a distribution deal or whatever to come. But it sounds like above that on the to-do list was, how do I tell this story as truthfully and as accurately in terms of how I want to communicate as possible? Is that true?
Yes. Yes, Courtney. Very true. You're so intuitive. And for me, that's the way I operate. I have to lead with my heart first. I have to believe in what I'm doing, because I'm very honest. And I'm very, and that's just, I have to align in that way. It's, yes, it's kind of hard for me to compartmentalize in that regard. Of course I want it to be successful. I want everyone to see it and to go tell their friends to see it and for it to get this big distribution deal. But I will say that was never my first priority. On the first thing was honoring my heart and the story and what I wanted to do in the creative process, and just, it's almost like sometimes you have to put yourself in a vacuum a little bit, because someone's always going to tell you about the shit that's going to go wrong or the shit that's not going to work or blah, 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 blah. It's like when I first decided to move to LA and go to try the acting thing, no one supported me.
Right. And
not even myself, really, at that time. I was like, what am I doing? I don't know, but I'm so glad I did it. You know, like there, you're always going to find it's very easy to find the naysayers. Sometimes it's harder to find the people that just like allow you to be who you are and say, yeah, you can do that. Why not? And I don't know how, like, again, piecing this all back together is so special for me to like look back. And I will say it came from collaborating with some very amazing artists with big hearts, and who also believed in this story and like what it could become.
Yeah.
And also kind of aligning in that it was important for me to surround myself with people who aligned with like the why.
Yes.
You know, I didn't necessarily have like someone write a little talking parrot on my show. I already had that in my head, the talking person in my head that was like, nah, 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 nah. You know, I don't think you necessarily always have to have the person in your ear that's like, well, this is going to be too hard. It's like, yeah, we know it's going to be hard. But again, is that going to make us not do it? Hopefully not.
Right. What's the alternative? It's hard. Probably there's part of us that wants to do it because it's hard. Because if it wasn't, where's the thrill? You know, the thrill is in that, yes, it's hard. Yes, I have that voice telling me like, you shouldn't do it. And there's that little rebel inside of us that's like, but what if I did?
Yes.
What if I did?
What if we did it? What if we did it? And also, like, I go back to, I am just beyond thankful for the people that I have worked with on this project and have worked way too long with not enough money on this passion project that got thwarted by a pandemic at some point, you know, and I know we all have those stories too. And I just go back to like, I couldn't have done this alone.
Right.
I couldn't have, you know, I think that if filmmaking in particular on this scale, like some things, yes, you can just like do your by yourself. Sure. So having that sense of confidence and ground of saying, this is what I'm saying, this is what I want to do. And then also having the flexibility and the openness to say, okay, now what do you guys think? How can we make this work and work together?
And this is why I'm obsessed with female filmmakers, because I feel like there are many men who are amazing men. There are many men that I've collaborated with who are amazing men. And there's something really special about women coming into a space that they are often not a part of as far as executive producing, directing, writing goes. I mean, the percentages are so not what the population percentages are in terms of women in those positions and women of color in those positions and men of color in those positions. But when women come in, it's just a different, it's just another way of existing in this industry that is more about collaboration, is about flexibility, is about rolling with it and versatility and being able to open up to possibility, even in the midst of absolute demise.
Yes, you're right. I think you're speaking, I agree, because actually this film is primarily run by female filmmakers. Our DP is, you know, Natalie Kingston, incredible. First AD, producer, director, most of the key department heads, besides I think the editing department, was female. And that felt important to me too, yeah. In particular with this story. And again, this story, you know, eating disorders don't only affect people who identify as female. It's universal. But I guess just for me as a filmmaker, that's kind of what naturally came to be in Shapeless.
Right.
And I'm proud of that.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. Okay. I could talk to you for 17 more hours, but
likewise,
we both have children. So,
yeah. Oh yeah. Them? I'm just kidding.
Oh, who's that? Let me ask you one last question. I am very interested in, here's a revealing question, right? I'm really interested in that mid-career artist who is full of self-doubt or fear or concern that things are not going to be possible. That, you know, not every film gets into Tribeca. That's kind of the beauty of that festival. It's like 66 films or something out of thousands, right? So not everyone is going to land that plane. And sometimes your work is better than other times, you know, you're like, well, that wasn't exactly it, but let me try again. So for that filmmaker or artist or human being who's in the middle of the process, you know, in the belly of the whale, trying their damnedest to just make a little progress forward, what would you say to them?
Oh gosh, that's such a good question. I think that it's super easy to slip into looking at the outcome, the expectation. And I think it's, I think goals and daydreaming is so important. So don't stop daydreaming about what your film could be. If you pin all your hat on that or whatever, if you put all your eggs in that one basket though, I think you're setting yourself up for failure. So I think again, it's that shifting back of going back to the why. What about this do I love? What about this do I not love? You know, and yeah, you're going to have to do some things you don't love to get the thing going, to get the people that you need to help you. But I think it's going back to that sense of just that you don't have to figure it all out today, right now. And I think that hopefully gives a sense of breath. And that the doors will, I kind of believe that the doors will open sometimes when you stop looking for them so hard. Mm. Sometimes it's when I've stepped back and put the thing down and then something will ping and I'm like, oh, I should reach out to that person and just like see what's going on. And I don't know why I thought of that person, but then all of a sudden I'm talking to that person and I'm like, oh, I get it. I get why I thought in my head to talk to you, because somehow you're helping me with this other question that I was thinking about. And it's, again, it's kind of not knowing how all the pieces are going to come together. And I know how frustrating that is, because that's been my life until this point, I think. And I have such a sense of fear of the after. I'm like, I don't know. Am I ever going to make another great piece of art, or is this the one? And am I okay with that? I think I am. I think I'm like, this is the one. I did my best. I hope something else comes along.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know. I don't know if this was any sort of answer except going back into the, getting back, to going inward. Sometimes it's the stuff on the outside and it's the people doing their stuff. And although we try not to compare, sometimes that can be really be hard to not compare. Right. And to know that you're enough. And also, like, people love to hate on our industry because everyone consumes it. It's like the person at the grocery store who's telling you about the movie they just saw and doesn't understand the one you're making, and whatever, it's anywhere, they're around. They love to hate on this industry. There's always going to be somebody out there telling you not to do it. So it's kind of like going back into that little sense of fire that started it, I think sometimes can help. And I also believe in life. I also believe in not putting so much pressure on the thing. Sometimes I think you have to live some life experiences that will help you make the thing or write the thing or tell the thing. And again, I don't think there's really any way to know what that looks like unless you're living in that day-to-day life.
I fully agree. And I think that's just, those are wonderful words to share with people and give people just to remember to come back to why you started, what that fire is, and where you are in your process. Because like you said, like at the end of the day, there are people who will like it, will not like it. Maybe sometimes it gets in to Tribeca Film Festival, if you are Kelly Murtaugh. and sometimes it's not, you know? And it's okay. And either way, you're enough. What you're doing is good.
Yes.
The process is good. You can affirm that for yourself as much as possible.
And I think one other piece to remember is you're the only you. Like that, you are the only Courtney, exactly right. You. You're right. This manifestation of you and your spirit in this body. And that is unique enough. And you have a unique enough perspective to say what you need to say.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's sort of like, instead of trying to write the film that you think will be commercially successful, it's sort of like going back to the daydreaming and the imagining and the like, what do I really want and think and experience and love? And I think it gives you that sense of empowerment, because that's what you can control, you know, is your response to the world and the way that you show up. But like, we can't control all those other things.
Right.
And we want to hear each, I don't know, me, I love art obviously, and I love all different types. So I want to see and hear and experience and listen to all different types.
Yeah.
And that fascinates me about life. And so then, yes, everyone does have their own little corner of the sky.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I think.
I love it. It's so good. Kelly, I'm so excited for you because your film, Shapeless, is in Tribeca Film Festival.
Where is it? I like hearing you say it, Courtney.
It's in Tribeca Film Festival, live from New York. So please tell everyone, because this will come out right before your film has its world premiere. So tell us where we can see and watch the film and then where we can follow more about you.
Great. So first of all, you can go to the Tribeca Film Fest website. And if you are interested in seeing it very soon, you can buy a ticket to the virtual premiere, which will become live on June 13th, the day after the in-person premiere. And I believe the link is live for either 48 hours or 72 hours. It's like a rental, essentially. Or if you want to wait to see it on the big screen, like all of us filmmakers love to hear, you can hopefully, I don't know any other film festivals. Hopefully we get into some other film festivals, but the dream is to get distribution one day so everybody can watch it. Hopefully, I mean, a theatrical run would be great, but obviously all the streamers would be great too. I'm open to it all. And then you can follow at Shapeless the Film on Instagram. That would be the most up-to-date way to follow the film. And if you want to follow me personally, you can follow me on Instagram as well at Kelly Murtaugh, M-U-R-T-A-G-H. And that would be great.
Yeah.
I would love that.
Thank you so much. This is such a great conversation. I'm like ready to go.
And me too. I
can't wait to watch your film. And
I also can't wait to hear more about your series. And I'm excited. I'm really, really excited about that for you and for everyone.
Thank you. Yeah. Let's KIT as the kids say. Maybe the kids don't say that, but
what does that mean?
Keep in touch.
Oh, acronym. There we go. I was like, ooh, I don't know this one.
LYLAS. Did you do
that
one?
Yeah. Sister.
Yeah. Yes. Signed every note that way. Yeah. Kelly, this has been great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been awesome.
And that's Kelly, and her film Shapeless premieres this weekend at the Tribeca Film Festival. Everything you need to watch it and follow her, all of that information is in the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, share it online, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And as always, I'm so grateful for you being here and for us to be able to have this conversation and just creating a better space for all of us to create the art and tell the stories, the whole stories that need to be told. So thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon.